Well, this is the Decoration Day weekend, and I sincerely hope that you take it easy on the highway. No use rushing. Best that can happen is that you'll get there 5 or 10 minutes earlier than what you thought, and so what's the reason to get there that early? Just take it easy. There's no doubt that we'll be talking to a number of people that possibly have never heard the party line before. And I sincerely hope that after you hear it, that you don't say, I'm glad that I never heard it before. You know, we talk with a lot of people. We talk with people who claim that they've been to the moon. You don't believe that, huh? So we have. We talked to a man that, well, it was just about a year and 2 weeks ago tonight that I met a fella out in California. May 11th and May 12th of last year, about 54 weeks ago, I was out at the Giant Rock Airport, the 4th Annual Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention. The reason I'm mentioning this is we may have... See, normally we've got 8 listeners. Decoration Day weekend, we possibly have... Or we may have, you know, really gone wild tonight. We may have 11. Could be 14. I don't know. But, I met a man out there at this interplanetary spacecraft convention. A man about 60 years of age by the name of Buck Nelson. And Buck is a farmer from Missouri. And he claims that he went to the moon, Venus, and Mars one weekend, 4th of July weekend. And when he came back to this planet, the Earth, the Venusians... requested Buck to take care of their Venusian dog for 4 or 5 days. They were going to leave it on this planet. I guess they were going to go to some other planets, you know. And they left this 385-pound dog with Buck Nelson. I could just see some guy on the highway right now, you know. He possibly stopped in to one of the diners on the way, and in this diner, they possibly had, you know, over in the corner, they had a little small bar, and he figured, you know, I've had a real tough week and taking the family out, and I might have one. And so he lifted one, and he's listening to this. He said, can this be, is this possible? A fellow on the air is talking about a 385-pound dog. This is the last drink you'll have, neighbor. You stick to coffee if you're going to drive. But I'm giving you a square count. This man told me about a 385-pound dog. And well, we've talked to a lot of people who have had unusual stories. And we've got a lad with us tonight. He's got a story to tell us, too. Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, from Edgewater, Florida. Representing the planet Venus. You stick with us. And... you know, don't use the heavy foot. No heavy foot on the gas tonight. Just take it easy. Hey, before we talk with our guests, let me just take a moment to take care of a little piece of business. E-W-I-N-G of Edgewater, Florida. Bob, we had the opportunity of talking, I guess, about 4 or 5 months ago when we were out in Carteret, New Jersey, which is the transmitter of WOR, and at that time I think you had a lady who was kind enough to bring to these microphones. She was a trance medium. Now, I happen to have in front of me an envelope, and on this envelope, on the upper left-hand corner of the envelope, as a return address, first of all, it says Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, representing the planet Venus, Edgewater, Florida. Bob, what do you mean by that, representing the planet Venus?
Well, John, after 365 days of our work, Miss Brady and I are given to understand by the Venusians that we represent them. It's the little bulletin that I put out, the New Era, is there. And we are given instructions and guidance whenever we are lecturing, touring, and we know in advance what to do. We are unpaid employees of the planet Venus, as we see it.
Well, now, You've just made the statement, Bob, that you know that you are representing the planet Venus. You know that the publication that you are printing out in Edgewater, Florida, you've just made the statement that you know that this is... How did you say that again? This is from the planet Venus?
From the satellite of the planet Venus. We never talked to Venus direct.
From the satellite? You seem to be a little confused, too, Ellery.
Yes, Bob Ewing. Shall I address you as Mr. Ambassador, do I understand? Is that correct?
There's no titles involved with the Venusians, ever.
Oh, well, how shall I address you? What do you prefer?
Just plain Bob Ewing. That's very
Bob
well.
Ewing. My Bob Ewing, the satellite of the planet Venus, throws me off my bearings for a while. I wish you would elaborate. I have never found any references to a satellite going around the planet Venus.
Well, Mr. Lerner, in our work, we are told that the Venusians have planets orbiting, satellites orbiting Earth. We know that there are 10 in number. There is a satellite.
You are referring to Venusian satellites orbiting the Earth?
Artificially made satellites, yes.
Orbiting the Earth that comes from Venus?
Yes.
I see. Now I follow you.
And satellite 2 is the satellite most concerned with New York. Geographically, it is closest to New York and handles the, let us call it the monitoring, such as the Long John Show every night, probably, here in New York.
I see. And does this particular satellite stay over New York continuously? Is it sort of located permanently over New York and it rotates around the planet as we turn?
Yes, that is correct. Satellite 2 will stay with you. Satellite 5 is our home satellite. We are a part of the unit of Satellite 5. It is with that satellite alone that we work.
When you say we, are you referring to Ms. Bob Ewing and Miss Brady?
Yes. And there have been others associated with it that are helping me work along.
Supposing I decided to become associated with you, Bob, would you automatically feel that I was a part of Satellite 5?
Not automatically, John. It would come during a personal interview with the Venusians. In other words, if Miss Brady were here and we were speaking with the Venusians, they would make up whatever decision there is to be made in the case of Long John.
Well, now, how do you speak to the Venusians? Or do you go to that planet?
Why, John, the entire contact with little quotation marks on either side is made by Miss Brady, a regular trance medium who has had the gift of mediumship, psychic ability, since birth. Developing it in her teens. And while in a complete trance, her vocal cords are operated by someone, let us say. Quotation marks again.
I'm glad you said that, someone. In other words, my question, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bob, but how do you know that that someone is the planet Venus? And incidentally, is the planet Venus a person?
No, decidedly not. It's another world, such as our own planet, with lakes, with mountains, with valleys, with an atmosphere, cities, a ruling council, people, schools, all of the rest.
Well, does the president of the planet Venus talk to this trance medium, Miss Brady, or who actually contacts him?
You were right the first time. Hamamatra has the... It isn't a title, it's a descriptive word. The word leader of the Venusian people, in that he is senior member of the ruling council at this moment. With Hamamatra we speak, yes. Hamamatra?
Is this the name of the language you speak, yes?
No.
We speak, yes.
But Hamamatra has spoken through Miss Brady most recently, and... The latest thing that we have done of some consequence, perhaps, is a meeting at Cocos, Florida, where there were 350 guided missile people. Hamamatra, during the course of the evening, did speak through Miss Brady,
However, so did two other people, Humboldt and Johann, both pilots of Venusian Ventlers, as they call them, flying saucers, as we call them, UFOs, as the Air Force calls them.
Ventlers. Now, Ventler is synonymous with UFOs or flying saucers.
It is the craft flown by Venusians, yes. Martians, Jupiterians,
would
Jupiterian.
Be a different, no.
Fine.
Now, Hamamatsu, is this the name of an individual or is this a title?
It is his name.
This is his name. Like my name is Long John, you're Bob Ewing. His name is Hamamatsu. Have you ever seen Hamamatsu?
No, I have not.
Has Miss Brady ever seen Hamamatsu?
She has never spoken of it, though. If we think of her astral flight, she may have seen various parts of the Venusian countryside and things like that, but she has never spoken of seeing Hamamatsu.
When you say astral flight, are you implying that Miss Brady astrally projects her body to the planet Venus?
Not necessarily to the planet Venus, but to various places on this Earth and to various planes of existence, though I have no specific record of it having been the planet Venus. In a flying saucer, she has projected herself as recently as I think it was about 2 months ago.
When you say in a flying saucer, you mean that she gets on this Ventler as Miss Brady and then astrally projects her body from the flying saucer to another location?
No, she's sitting in class in Daytona Beach, Florida, during our Wednesday night master's class, as we call it. Lasting from about 8 o'clock until about 9:30, she is in trance. During that time, while the various personalities speak through her, she has astral flight.
She isn't there?
Physically, she is there.
The astral body is
not there? The astral body is not present, that is correct.
And Hamamatsu, Hama, and Yoma use her body.
They, the Venusians and many others, use her vocal cords, yes.
There are others besides Hama, Yoma, and Hamamatsu?
Yes, there are very many. You're speaking of Johann and Humboldt were the two names you have switched to.
How did I ever miss that list? What is it?
Johann.
Johann, I'm sorry.
And Humboldt. Johann happens to be in charge of flight operations, Satellite 5. All flights from Satellite 5.
Ellery Lanier.
Mr. Bob Ewing, Satellite 5, you say, is, in a sense, anchored over New York City. I would like to know, is it at any time possible to have a visual sighting, even in the, to the slightest degree, of Satellite 5 over New York? Can we hope for such a visual sighting?
Well, your question, Ellery, has two parts there. Number one, it is Satellite 2 that I spoke of as being over New York. And the thing is this, that it was October 21st that Miss Brady and I appeared on the Long John Show. That was a Monday night, as he recalled. Saturday night previously, we stood on the corner, Miss Brady and I, of 7th Avenue and Bleecker Street. And we very definitely and positively saw a green fireball fired from Upper Manhattan to the south.
Yes.
And it is perfectly possible that visual representation of these things will be seen and are seen continually in the New York area.
These are things connected with Satellite 5.
Yes, flights from there.
That is not Satellite 5 itself.
No, that is 10,000 miles out.
10,000 miles, you say?
Yes.
And what is the size? Do you know anything, or have you any information as to the dimensions of Satellite 5?
Yes, roughly, not the dimensional things themselves, but it appears to take the form of the spokes of a wheel, such as the little model that can be obtained in model stores and bulk. A hub with spokes radiating from it. The center portion is the living quarters for the crew, and the outer rim contains the technical apparatus, and dimensionally, we do not have that.
I've never seen this model. What model are you referring
to? I have one. I have built one. I have it in my home.
Well, now, if you say you built one, that's different. But in other words, are you saying that these are available in model shops?
Yes, they're available in our model shops.
If you can mention the name of things, I've never heard of it.
It's a Disney production. It's a Walt Disney?
Walt Disney,
yes. It's very cleverly built. It has radiating spokes of nylon thread that you painstakingly weave around and turn
into a brand. This is KD. This is a knockdown.
It's kit. A knockdown plant.
And you build it.
Yes.
You build it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of it.
It's very striking. Makes a good coffee table piece. Has a base. It's about 98 cents.
Let's take a moment. There's so many things we want to talk about. I know that Ellery Lanier has a number of questions, and I know that I have. You tossed in something a couple of minutes ago, Bob Ewing. You mentioned about a class in Daytona Beach, Florida. Now, I've never been in Florida. What is the relationship of Daytona Beach, Florida, to Edgewater, Florida? What is the distance between these two communities?
It's about 20 miles, with the city of New Smyrna Beach in between.
Mm-hmm. Now, at Daytona Beach, Florida, you have mentioned to us that there are classes there. Are you teaching something, or is Miss Bowles teach something?
The theory, John, is this, that we all have the five senses, that with proper reflection and development of the senses, we can evolve. Mediumship is not necessarily a gift. Mediumship and psychic ability is within most everyone. I think some figures say 9 out of 10 people.
When you say some figures, where did you get these figures?
Various books that have been written on the subject of mediumship and evolvement, as it is most always called. So you have the situation where people desirous of acquiring mediumship would like to sit with a medium and to learn from the master teachers. The master teachers are those of other realms, other planes of existence, who are associated with those people here on Earth and will assist their education, let us say. So in Miss Brady's class on Wednesday evening, we have many mediums sitting.
Many mediums?
I would hazard the guess that mediumship, in one form or another, clairvoyance or clairaudience, is perhaps attained by 8 out of 12 people sitting there.
I wonder if you could tell us the difference between those two terms, clairaudience and clairvoyance.
Clairaudience is to hear clearly by derivation. Clairvoyance is to see clearly by derivation. So, we think of clairvoyance as someone who is able to see manifestations from another dimension. Popularly, people think of the next dimension that we're worrying about as the one that Einstein has brought up, the fourth dimension. It has come to be known as the spirit world, or the astral world. It has many names. No, not by Mr. Einstein.
He didn't make that statement.
No, I think you recall a quotation. Someone said, aren't you interested in knowing the people of other worlds or something? And he says, I know there's something in the sky, the UFOs, but I'm not anxious to know more about it. It's a quotation from the Einstein.
Hello? I really want to continue with this concept of being able to see the satellite 5. I was wondering whether it is at a constant height over New York City, or does it ever descend somewhat so that we may conceivably have a viewing of it directly from, say, Times Square, looking up into the sky?
No, I have no exact and positive information on that. I can certainly tell you this, that our satellite number 5, which is vaguely somewhere in our direction, I have, of course, never observed. And they have never said that it either raises or lowers or travels vertically or horizontally in any direction.
When you say our
satellite
number 5, do you feel that you're a Venusian, that this is something that belongs to you? Or do you feel that you're an Earth person?
I'm just one of the help. I'm an Earth person.
And in other words, then, should I also refer to satellite 5 as our satellite?
Can I include myself in that group as an Earth person?
John, you haven't joined our unit yet.
Well, then, in other words, as an Earth person, you're not making that statement, our satellite fire.
No, I'm...
As a representative of Venus.
I'm quoting directly. John, when I give you a direct answer, I have about 100 tapes that I can quote from. And I'm quoting from Phyllis Raleigh, a woman teacher of Venus, who has concluded the tape one day saying, "You are part of my group, of Satellite 5, which is my station, and which is Johann's station, and you are one of the people of Satellite 5. So, the relationship is that of representative, let us say again.
Bob, I wanted to mention at this point, I have observed the planet Venus through a, what I would call a medium power telescope, and I've had the great pleasure of observing it in the crescent moon form, which is quite a beautiful sight. And I understand, I have looked at some photographs taken through extremely high power telescopes of the planet Venus, using various wavelengths of light other than the regular visible wavelengths, in which differences of surface conformations like mountains and the varying clouds over the surface of the planet have been observed. This is quite exciting to me. However, most of the theories that I have read, I'm not talking of your particular school of thought, claim that the planet Venus is probably covered with a surface of water and a continuous ocean without any land surface at all. Do you have any information as to the actual appearance of the surface? Has that been transmitted?
Yes, it was transmitted quite publicly. February the 7th in the Rockledge High School in Cocoa, Florida, before the panel of eight men. The master of ceremonies was the mayor of the city. It was the high school auditorium, Miss Brady sitting on the left of the auditorium, the panel being about 40 feet away. And there was present the meteorologist, whom we are told is in charge of the final estimation of the weather for the Vanguard and Atlas firings at Cape Canaveral. So he led into this discussion asking a very factual question about the coverage, the atmosphere content, the surface, and things like that. And he was given very direct answers by Hembel and by Johann. He was...
What happened to Hamamatra? He didn't get in on this?
Hamamatra has, when you hear him, the dignity of a John Foster Dulles or a President Eisenhower speaking...
Is he the Dulles of Venus?
He is. This is his mission to Earth, and when he comes, it is a fairly rare occasion, and not too frequent. But the question of the atmosphere and the surface was battered back and forth between the Venusians and the scientific panel there. I might add that a man of authority, we are told, of course, when a man is of authority, somebody tells you he's of authority, of the Atlas firings was one of the members of the panel, as were two electronic heads of the manufacturer's representatives there at the Cape Canaveral missile base. So they led into the question as to the content, the carbon dioxide and the oxygen content. The Venusians claiming that intense heat and intense cold were impossible to have on Venus, that it had a regular temperature, such as we do, but will support life, owing to the fact that the atmosphere that generally covers Venus is making an envelope, a blanket, about it. They spoke of the mountains, the valleys, and the flat places.
Bob, I am very much puzzled. I will say, assuming that...
You don't know how much puzzled you're going to be by the time 4 o'clock comes.
I know from what you say and what astronomers say and what I have observed myself through the telescope that the planet Venus seems to have a very thick cloud covering. And assuming let us suppose that this planet, our Earth that we live on, had that type of covering, we never would see the stars. all we would see would be a great big mass of cottony, billowing clouds in the sky, and we would have absolutely no notion that the stars existed or that there was a sun. We might, in fact, not know that there was a universe outside of our clouds. What puzzles me and what I would like to ask you is whether any of the persons who are personages of the planet Venus who have been transmitting to your people have indicated whether it is possible for the inhabitants of the planet Venus to see the stars or to see our Earth, to see us in a sense.
That was mentioned one night, yes. And they said, of course, they have quite a different view of the universe than we have from our Earth. But how about the fellow that went up in the balloon and found everything was real black out there?
You're talking about our man here on Earth.
Our Air Force man.
Well, as I recall, he did see the stars. Did he not? As I recall that I think he did see the stars, but the sky was black. Black and blue.
Mm-hmm.
However, he did see the stars. But apparently the Venusians do know that the stars exist. They are not fooled by this cloud, this continuous cloud. Or do you say that the cloud breaks? Do they see through the cloud?
Yes, I believe I can make that assumption, because they do speak of the view that they have from Venus. And as to mentioning stars as to whether they exist or not, they not only know they exist, but they visit them.
The gentleman, let me interrupt for just a moment to remind our listeners that this is WOR Radio, your station in New York. My name is Long John. We call this the Party Line.
Now, I want to ask you about the planet Venus in terms of the traditional notion of Venus as being the goddess of beauty. And do you have any information as to whether the women on Venus, assuming that there are women on Venus, I don't know, it may be a planet inhabited only by men. I don't know, I am asking you. Does your information tell anything about what kind of women there are on the planet Venus?
Oh, yes. You have two questions there. Are there women on Venus, and are they pretty? And I believe there was a first portion to that, too, wasn't there? We have the woman, Simmons Raleigh, who has been coming to Miss Brady for many, many years. She is a Venusian master teacher. There is no frivolity, really, in the way they speak to us. In other words, she's a teacher of philosophy. So when the question was brought up one evening, are all of the women beautiful or pretty or some such word as that, she said many of us are attractive, yes, and just like yourself, because the physical body that they have is the same as ours.
And you mean a Venusian woman might be of the same average height as an Earth woman?
Yes, and we have an answer there very apt. Miss Brady, I haven't her exact height, but I think as John remembers, about 5'11", wouldn't you say, John?
Yes, I would agree with you. Yes.
And Cimitrali has told us that by natural law, some of these things that we wonder why they work that way, that there are natural laws governing things, she has roughly the same physical makeup as does her instrument, as they call Miss Brady. So that as the future rolls around...
That is very interesting.
The two women will one day, in the scheme of things, appear together on the platform, and their work will be done simultaneously, the two women almost being replicas of each other.
This is almost a sense resonance, vibrations.
Let me ask you this question, Bob Yuri. Why is it necessary for the people on this planet, the planet Earth, to receive these philosophical messages from Venusians? Don't we have enough philosophy on this planet without going away from it to try to get additional philosophy?
John, where do we find good philosophy these days, my friend?
Well, I know nothing about the Venusian philosophy, but I don't think we're in dire need of that. I think there's many other things we need. If these people have all of this intelligence, which evidently is considered by you to be superior to our intelligence, and if they like it, and evidently they do, and when I say
I imagine that they are... Well, first of all, let me ask the question. Why should I assume anything? Would you say that they prefer the American to other nationalities?
No, John.
I'm talking now about the Venusians, the possibility of them, of their preference.
No, sir. They have many, many times stressed the fact that they must contact Earth as a whole, favoring no country over the other, including our so-called enemies, in quotation marks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to philosophy...
Why do you put that word in quotation marks?
Well, who's your friend today? Sometimes your enemy tomorrow. I recall that we fought the Japanese, and the Chinese were on our side at that time, I believe, and I think the situation's reversed a little now. The Russians were together with us in World War II. We, according to the headlines each morning, they're our enemies. It leaves the man a little bewildered, but then there's the...
Well, aren't you interested in today? In other words, if you and I are friendly today, this is the way we're living at this particular time. If something occurs later in the morning or tomorrow or next month that we find we just don't hit it off anymore... And I'll employ the same word that you use. If we become enemies, in other words, we're not planning on becoming enemies. We're friendly today, and it's quite possible that we may become enemies, and maybe in 2 years from now we may be friends again. But during the time that there's an animosity that exists between two people, it exists, and that's it. So. The Venusians, if they find that we feel that the Russians are enemies of America today, well, that's the situation today. Now, are they going to give us information how to protect ourselves, how to be able to build satellites that we can launch instead of having them fail each time, or are they going to give us philosophy? Very frankly, I don't need any more philosophy, and I don't think we need too much of that.
Well, John, I'm going to take issue with you, and perhaps almost start
you're
with...
You're going to become my enemy, huh?
Oh, yes,
go
right
ahead.
Here now. And perhaps to begin, though, by begging your pardon, that when I say our so-called enemies, I'm speaking from the Venusian side of the tape recorder. They refer to them as... roughly that quotation marks around the word enemies, understanding as they do our situation. So it isn't their designation whatsoever as their being our enemies. Now, this business about giving us advance information or select information, no. The closest they have come to answering your question was in Miami in December before, I think, about 200 people... They were asked this question specifically. In the event of war, would they favor one side over the other? Hamamatsu gave the answer saying that if war is to be brought about by the Russians in a sudden attack or something like that, that they will at that time fly by with a tremendous flyover, which will dissuade the Russians from doing anything at all.
Tremendous what? What's that, Bob?
A flyover, a flyby, in other words.
What does this mean?
Let us say that it would describe what happens in Moscow every May Day. The tremendous armada of planes.
You mean this would be a show of force?
Yes.
A show of power, a demonstration of power?
Yes.
And do they describe what this would be? Would this be a flight of, for example, thousands and thousands of flying saucers going across the area of Asia?
I wouldn't go into the thousand number. I would go into the hundreds. Yes. That from every satellite station, whatever craft they were called upon to furnish, they would, and fly by Russia.
As I gather, I understand there are only 5 satellite stations, or did
yes.
I... There are 10.
There are 10, I think.
I see. I wanted to ask you, in your reception of information from the Venusians, what language do they telepath or send their telepathic messages in?
They speak English. Just as sometimes I think of them as our own Voice of America, broadcasting in the languages of those countries whom we wish to contact, the same situation. Many times we have asked for samples of their language, or without our asking, they have gone into their own language, so that my tapes have many, many samples of Venusian.
I gather that this process of transmission doesn't involve you with the FCC in any sense at all. You don't use any wavelength that corresponds to our standard wavelengths which require legal arrangements.
No, they haven't gotten around to us yet. They probably will, and they'll put a tax on it when they do.
Well, do you think the Venusians would be in a position to pay a tax?
No, I haven't seen any money change hands yet, have I?
Have you ever seen the Venusians?
No, I have not.
And we Miss Brady?
Miss Brady has not, to the best of my knowledge. However, we do have a member of the class who feels that she saw two Venusian boys. And it was confirmed on tape that two Venusian boys were, at that approximate time, that was approximately August of 1957, last year, that they were in the vicinity of Daytona Beach, having completed a mission and having traveled over most of the Earth. They have gone home to make the report.
What did they look like? Did anybody describe them?
She saw them in a restaurant. She was attracted by their hands. Fine, long, thin, tapering, a darkish complexion on the olive drab, and very, with a woman describing it, beautiful eyes. They seemed, in other words, sensitive or aesthetic.
These were young boys?
They were, I don't think the girl, I've spoken with the girl, by the way, and I don't think she got into their ages. Perhaps, early 30s or late 20s.
Bob, what about the age span of the Venusians? Is their age span similar to ours? Do they live as long as we do, or longer, or less?
A great deal longer, but there's always the problem of calculating the time difference, because in reference to time, of course, we have been told there is no such thing as time, nor is there such a thing as space. However, we govern ourselves by time, and they always translate. And many, many phrases, when necessary, they use the word in a matter of weeks as you count time, or in a question of hours as you reckon time. So, in their lifespan, Cimitrolli, for example, is 250 years old. That we know.
Is this considered middle-aged or elderly?
Their span, I believe, runs from somewhere to 350 to 400 years.
In terms of our years, not in terms of the Venusian years.
No, that's right. I believe they're calculating for us. I think it's
In other words, so that we would understand that they would... In other words, we won't misunderstand them in that way.
That's right. And they pointed out that physically, of course, they don't look their age.
And I am curious about the length of time that it takes them to reach maturity. Do you have information about that?
Absolutely. They are matured at a very much earlier age, as they tell us. There is not the necessity for being born and going through the usual childhood that we have. They grow up quite rapidly, being highly developed people who become aware of things that they have to know. In other words, their education and their maturity of speed.
I want to ask you something else about the planet Venus. Now, you understand, Bob, that I have absolutely no position as to the validity or truth of any of these things that you are saying. But for the sake of understanding, I will assume that what you are saying is so, in order to get a true picture and then form a judgment later on. When the planet Venus, in its circus round the sun, comes close to the Earth, is this the time that more contacts are made, or is it a question of their relevance as to the relative position in the solar system of the Earth and the planet Venus? Is there any connection there?
There have never been, no. And the proximity feature and so forth has never been discussed. It seems to be of no consequence at all in our work. We have nothing on that at all.
So how do this group of 10 satellites, do they come to us directly? Do they just fly straight from Venus to the Earth? Or are they transported through some other means?
Both are true. There are large ventilators. I was quite surprised because somewhere I have a tape that said that they have approximately, I think it's 30 or 40 of the large Ventlers, each large Ventler carrying approximately 12 small ones.
I think we should mention again for some of the listeners that have just tuned in that the word Ventler is a Venusian word that is used to describe a flying saucer or UFO. Is that correct?
Yes, that's their term for them, John. And the large ones bring smaller ones to Satellite 5. However, many of them can make the trip under their own power. As a matter of fact, if we continue this part of it, it becomes very interesting because we have some excellent tapes where the pilots more or less break down and say, you should see the trouble we have with the old ones.
Bob,
In English? In English. And they discuss the maintenance. Someone asked them one night, how many trips can you make from Venus?
Bob, are these tapes available?
Oh, yes.
Yes, they were made available to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had them out in Carteret, New Jersey, just about a year ago. It was last October, to be exact. Let me take just a moment to take care of a little piece of business, and then we'll be back with our guest of the morning.
Wouldn't commit myself out of the way. However, as you know, my job is to remove all factual material. I delete the facts. That is a function of the fact editor. We're just muddled with facts nowadays, and it's a very welcome experience to be relieved of facts. I wanted to swing into the question of asking Bob about time and whether time...
I wonder if we can hold it.
We'll hold it, yes.
But just a moment, I'll tell you why, Ellery.
Yes.
It seems to me, I may be wrong, but it seems to me that Bob sort of worked his way out of answering a question before. And Bob, when I ask you a question, if you'd rather not comment on it, fine. You know, just no comment, and we're out of business on that one. Let me rephrase this question again. I asked you the question about 15 or 20 minutes ago. I said to you, Bob, why do we need so much philosophy? Why do we have to have Venusians coming to this planet or sending the message telepathically through a transmedium? I don't understand the reason, the need for this.
Well, John, you just got through with the news report. And the headlines tonight speak about De Gaulle, Algeria, and various things. The Dutch are having trouble in Indonesia, so forth. It made me think the other day, and I got to thinking this way, trying to arrive at a question for myself. You know, I'm harder on myself really than you are. And I said, well, on Plymouth Rock, when the pilgrims came in, all they had trouble with was the Indians and the need for growing corn and so forth. So with a blunderbuss and so forth, they went after the Indians. And then they had minor troubles. But here today, regardless of where we live in any community on the face of the United States, we have policemen on each corner. Then we have the sheriff's cars driving down the street.
We have what?
A policeman standing on the corner.
On each corner?
Well, in some communities, it's every other corner.
Continue.
And you have the sheriff's cars.
They have it in Phoenix that way. They don't have it in New York that way.
I live in Florida, but I can get WOR very nicely every night of the week in Florida, and I hear some pretty terrible things.
About New York?
Oh, yes. You have a delinquency problem here that no one seems to be able to live.
And you don't have this in Florida?
We have our problem, and...
But you don't have this on the planet Venus. Is that what you're saying?
On the planet Venus, they don't have it yet.
Did you say yes?
Yes.
Yes. In other words, what you're trying to say is that if we follow the ideals, what is the name of this person who brings these messages to Miss Brady?
Well, we have quite a... There's probably about
one in particular.
I'm a monster?
No,
Emma Crawley?
Woman.
Emma Crawley, yes.
In other words, you feel that we'd be able to lift the juvenile relationship problem?
Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. You didn't let me go far enough, though, because I had
You continue.
I had the sheriff's cars coming down our highways all over. Then you have the state police. And then you start in with the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Marines, And we're not at war with anybody. And we have the guided missile program. We have our airplanes in the air all the time and so forth. And it doesn't look like progress now since the Pilgrims, does it?
Too well.
Don't you think we need a philosophy to get back to some of the ideals?
Do you want me to answer that question? Or you just stuck?
I think you better answer.
If you'd like my answer to that question. I think you said, do we need a new philosophy?
Yes.
I think right now what we need is these clinicians can help us. I'd like to have them tell us how we can get one of these satellites up so it's going to orbit.
Well,
I think you can do this with philosophy. Maybe you can. Maybe I don't know what the word means.
There's a very simple thing that they would tell you, and that is that it is much easier to work with nature than against nature.
And you think that these satellites that we're constructing are not built to work with nature?
Very definitely. They have a propulsive charge, and it takes a tremendous thrust to get the thing off the ground. If you knew the secrets of nature, the laws of nature, and so forth, it would propel very nicely. You could fly it.
All right, this is fine. Do the Venusians know this?
Very definitely.
Well, what is the big production with all of this philosophy? Why not just tell us how to get this thing up? If they can build these Bentleys,
I think that's the term that you've used.
Bentleys.
That's right.
And, incidentally, how long does it take to make this trip between Venus and the Earth in a Bentley? Have you ever gotten this information?
Very definitely. It takes 24 hours from the Earth to Satellite 5, another 24 hours.
24 hours?
To
Earth? From Earth to Satellite 5,
yes,
24 hours?
I know. I've computed it too. It's about 200 miles an hour, I think it is.
The Satellite 5, not the Venus.
Now, what was the distance of Satellite 5?
10,000 miles. I've worked it out.
10,000 miles.
And 24 hours.
Now, what happens when we get to Satellite 5? It takes us how long to get to Venus?
Another 24 hours.
To get to Venus.
That's right.
Now, that's the thing that throws me.
Be careful of the trap there. There's a trap. I saw a newspaper reporter go off the deep end there.
I'm ready to jump, Dad. Tell me.
All right. Well, it's like an equation. You know the distance from Earth to Satellite 5, which is 10,000 miles. That has been given us.
All right.
Therefore, that can be accomplished in 24 hours.
Right.
But be careful, because from there out to the planet Venus, we don't know the distance. And we do not know whether there's an acceleration of speed or whether, as some of the... in many, many books on the subject, and I'm thinking that they're quite true, that there is a passing into the fourth dimension temporarily or something like that.
What does this mean, passing into the fourth dimension?
It would mean that attaining a very great acceleration and by a change of the physical body of the craft itself, let us say, that it would penetrate into another dimension and at that time not be relegated to the laws of speed, distance, and things as the way we think of them.
Bob, this is a very fascinating question. If you throw the space vehicle off into another dimension, then you've got to bring it back into our dimension in order to get it to land on the planet Venus. Must require some quick transatlantic navigation, interdimensional navigation.
Very true, and they've got a warning for you, too. They say that if the Air Force maintains that from here to the moon or here to Venus is a straight line, they're in all kinds of trouble because you need a map. And
Bob, I think...
I'm going to have to interrupt a moment, gentlemen. Here's a bulletin from the WOR newsroom. We'll bring you any additional bulletins as we get them in our WOR newsroom. I'm sorry, gentlemen, I had to interrupt. Continue, please. Ellery?
Yes, Bob, you were saying that if we think that our Air Force or our people think that the direction from the Earth to Venus is in a straight line, they are mistaken. I don't think they assume that. They assume that the direction can't possibly be a straight line. It goes through sections of a parabola or a parabola on the lift as the most economical way of utilizing available known fuel. So I don't think you have any quarrel with them at all. I think they're really hungry.
Yes, our quarrel is quite different, Ellery, because I'm not, I would, in an amateurish way, feel that a parabola or an ellipse would be what the ordinary person would call a straight line. I'm speaking about something that might resemble a zigzag. Owing, as Cimitrelli has said, to fields of very solid matter. And to conclude her sentence, which would bring a person to a very untimely end if he were to pursue a straight line out.
In other words, if you were going to navigate from the Earth to the planet Venus, you would get yourself a little balled up if you didn't have very exact navigational direction. You would need, in effect, a harbor pilot to guide you in, too,
true,
perhaps.
True. They say that we would need a map, which they would be happy to furnish at the time. They have a prediction, by the way, that I might slide in here. I've given it some thought and would publish it one of these days, shortly, is that they say that the United States will definitely have a man on the moon in 1958.
What's this again?
It's a little prediction, John.
Yeah, let me hear this again, please.
The Venusians have said that in the race to put a man on the moon, the United States will win it. We will not wait until the year 59, but it will be done in the year 58.
That we will have a man on the planet...
On the moon.
In 58.
Now,
you believe this?
I have gone out on a limb with the Venusians.
We have.
Very successfully.
We
and if you'll recall, on your party line on October 21st, we very clearly said that the Ventlers would fly in force and make token landings in November. And they said the same thing themselves on both CBS and NBC television programs in Portland, Maine. So here I go again.
Okay.
The Venusians, speaking through Miss Brady. The television cameras were on Miss Brady. She was in France. The announcer was speaking
right. Mm-hmm. You're right. But, of course, what's the story now? Are you telling us now that the saucers landed here in November?
Of course they did.
Well, I just wasn't aware of it.
We all read the same papers, and Ellery here has mentioned that he has quite a bit of facts these days to confront him.
Well, I try to get rid of all the facts. Don't get me wrong.
Because I'm very much afraid that what is factual on the headlines of a paper today is thought of by many people as not being fact in another sense.
Well, that's exactly the idea. You see, all through history, we have people have been finding out what they that what they had thought was an absolute fact wasn't anything near a fact at all. It was just a fiction or imaginary or a misunderstanding. So that it is very important to get rid of facts continuously.
Here's one that bothers me. I use it as a reference point. I speak sometimes as a space fiction that the Associated Press or anyone goes in for on the headlines of the papers. Reference has been made many times to a 3,000-mile radar. I would like to know of one application of a 3,000-mile radar since I have read those headlines and the fact that the Army has it. There are many things that it could have done recently, if you'll just think of the history since it came out a few months ago.
Well, Bob, there is preparation underway now for a multi-million and even billion-mile radar for effective functioning in the near future.
Yes, but let's get down to cases of 3,000-mile one that's been heralded very widely.
Yes.
We've had trouble, I'm thinking in terms of aircraft that were lost or missiles that went astray and things like that, and this would have helped out. I don't know where it's located in the United States, but 3,000 miles is a beautiful sweep.
Well, I know, but that is a problem.
We've got a number of telegrams here. Let me remind our listeners once again, just in case you've joined us for the first time, I know that in my brief experience in this business, mainly some... 3 years, no, it's going on to 4 years now, that I find that on Decoration Day weekends and 4th of July and Labor Day, that we do manage to get some listeners who joined us for the first time. And let me take just a moment, first of all, to welcome you. I hope that you're with us, and if you're driving on the highway, please take it easy. And we sit around and talk for some 37 and a half hours during the week while we talk with many interesting people. We have a teletype in our studio, which means that if you'd like to participate in the discussion, if you'd like to ask a question or give us your opinion about something, you're more than welcome to do so. just pick up your telephone in any community where you may be, and we do cover some 27 states tonight with the WOR signal. Ask for the Western Union operator. Tell the operator that you'd like to send a telegram to Long John, WUX, W-U-X, New York City. And within 3 or 4 minutes, after you place that message with the Western Union operator in your community, we should have it on our teletype machine. Now, I've mentioned this time and time again. I'm very sorry to say we have a number of telegrams that I am not in a position to read because we do not have names. In other words, some people have given us initials. If you don't want us to mention your name, we certainly will not mention it. We'll respect your wishes. Just put two words in the body of the telegram, no name. And I notice that a couple of people are not using their own names. And we cannot use the telegram because we have to check that and everything. However, I am reading them, and at least I'll have a knowledge of what you're trying to get across. And maybe I can incorporate it into our discussion in the morning with Bob Ewing and with Ellery Lanier. Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G. Bob Ewing claims that he's a representative of the planet Venus. And Ellery Lanier claims he's a fact editor of a science fiction publication. Fantastic science fiction. Let me read a couple of these telegrams. On our planet, a woman's childbearing period is about 33 years. If these Venusians live to such an advanced age and remain youthful, how come their planet isn't overrun with people when they live 300 years? Alice Gambolia. Gambolia. Did you care to answer that? I certainly can.
It was answered in reference to the... to make a parallel here, the Venusians have given us to understand that they are vegetarians. That they do not eat the body of either fowl, fish, or animal.
That is a Venusian fowl, fish, or animal.
That's true, yes.
They haven't imported animals from Earth, perhaps.
No, they have their own, Ellery. They have, if they went on, the next sentence on this tape is, we eat the eggs from the chickens. We have the milk from the cows, the honey from the bees, and so forth. Now, the question was raised by a member of our class, how then, if you do not slaughter the cows, do you keep from being overrun by just plain cows? The answer came back very quickly. We have a planned system. The cows are permitted to die of old age and so forth. Now, getting into the subject of the humans, they have merely planned their families. They have told us that the average size of a family is about 4 people. Mother, father, 2 children. There are exceptions, greater families, and small families. So Mitrali has said that they certainly can marry or not marry, and she has chosen not to marry.
Here's another telegram from Maplewood, New Jersey. Venus is goddess of love, not you.
That causes quite a bit of amusement with the Venusians. They have their humorous side, and I would like you all to hear Simitrali's voice to get the feeling I get when I hear you say that. Simitrali says that it is perfectly ridiculous, really, that you Earth people have given us the attribute of the planet of love, and Mars is a consequence of the planet of war. And your mythology and so forth has carried along these stories, and of course they're quite untrue, that most planets stand for any one thing.
This telegram in reference to Venus is goddess of love, not beauty, is from Jared Gilbert at Maplewood, New Jersey. Here's one from Brooklyn, from Martin Robinson. Robinson. Atmosphere of Venus, carbon dioxide, no oxygen surface.
temperature above boiling point of water. How can life exist?
It's on your job.
Very interesting, because...
No, let me moderate yourself. I'm asking you, Ellery, or don't you know?
Well, I don't want to present any factual material. I have some factual material, but I wouldn't...
Some fantastic material.
I wouldn't want to intrude the sexual material.
Yeah, that's a tough question, Joe. No, it's for you, Bob.
The kettle calling the pot fantastic here. Well, it's very, very interesting on that.
We hope that you'll make it interesting by having a good answer to that one. That's a rough one.
We have a long tape recording, because when we make a public appearance, I make a tape. And I was quite amazed at the time the... battle of wits going on between my Venusians on one side and the eight experts from Cape Canaveral on the other side of the auditorium stage. And Johann went very carefully into the subject of how the covering of carbon dioxide was, in effect, a protective envelope, which shut them off from many of the excess heat and cold and so forth. And this meteorologist, by the way, did agree completely that that was true there. Then, going into the subject of oxygen, there is quite a difference in my Venusians. By the way, these are not cold, stereotyped voices or something like that, or sort of a Frankenstein talking. Campbell is an exceptionally young pilot. He always, regardless of television, camera on, or whether...
Campbell is one of the persons who received messages from the Venusians, or is Campbell one of the Venusians?
He is one of the Venusians.
He is one of the Venusians.
A pilot. They kid him. He is the young one, trying to learn everything there is to learn at once, sitting over his feet in the process. He's only 75 years old.
Well, does this 75-year-old youngster have his temporal suddenly satellite 12, which is over New York City now? Or does he make his flight from satellite 12?
You just moved that satellite again. It's satellite 2 for New York City and 5 for us in Florida.
I beg your pardon. Satellite 2 over New York City.
Right.
I was going to ask you, we can assume now that while we are sitting here at these microphones, satellite 2 is over our heads and quite likely listening to what we are saying here tonight.
Very definitely. And the man doing the job is Kira. He is communications officer of satellite 2. We speak with him when we are north. I think you realize, I want everybody to realize, I don't do the speaking without Miss Brady. She is their instrument. So when we are north, the minute that Miss Brady goes into trans, if we have a particular desire to talk to our own satellite, or we're just keeping schedule, this thing, by the way, is on a very definite schedule, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, wherever we are, in the New York area, immediately, Kiros comes on, satellite 2.
This Venusian Kiros, who is sort of anchored permanently over New York City, in effect, this is his assignment,
yes.
I would say. Did you give him a title? Does he have a title?
No Venusian has a title. They have given us very clearly to indicate. So each time I read a book where someone is purportedly a Venusian and has a lovely long title, we can't agree.
I want to ask you, Bob. There is a British author, Clive Staples Lewis, I believe, by name, who wrote a story called Terra Longa, which you may or may not have come across, in which he described a civilization on the planet Venus. I don't know whether he claims this is a true description of life on the planet Venus. And it was very interesting in Terra Longa that people living on the planet Venus were, in a sense, free of original sin. They were living in a continuous state of goodness and purity, honesty and love. There was no evil thought or evil intention in their lives. However, from what you are saying, your reports about life on the planet Venus are not quite what the Paralonga description was, and the people on Venus actually are living more of a human type of life than was described in this story, where these people were living in a kind of paradise, because what I gather is that according to your information, life on Venus is not a paradise as such, or would you say it is?
But we'd have to get a dictionary here and dig up the word paradise. Yes, I think in an average sense, because as the Venusians point out, they have developed, along with their other developments, which are exceeding our own, the business of clairvoyance, of perception, of each other's feelings, emotions, and thoughts, and things like that. They do not, as a matter of fact, among themselves, use speech. It is mental, and telepathy is a great thing. Therefore, I can reply to you that, yes, they do live in essential goodness, because, as Cimitrelli has pointed out, when a boy meets a girl on Venus, they automatically know what each one is best suited for. They haven't the...
does that mean that the element of romance is eliminated in the sense that lovers don't have to seek out each other's inner secrets and inner desires and wishes and dreams, since they know that know each other directly?
I would have to reply almost yes to that, but I would like to say this, that it's hardly the topic for Cimitrelli, a teacher of philosophy. The Venusians are not going into those kind of subjects with us. We as a class don't ask them.
I see. Well, I want to ask...
However, apply it this way. That Hamamatsu, you might ask me, how did he get to be leader of Venus? As Cimitrelli has replied to that question, everyone automatically knows who is the best man for a position. Therefore, Hamamatsu was selected as a member of the Council of Elders. The man who had been selected with the greatest length of seniority is leader. Then he resigns after 8 years. He leaves the office. The next man in seniority takes over for 8 years. It is now Hamamatsu's turn, and he is in office 8 years, and then the man behind him becomes. So everyone, there's no voting, no political parties, no discussion about it.
In effect, there, you would say there is no question of whether there is to be democracy or not democracy.
No.
The question as such doesn't exist
that
on the planet
true.
Venus. In effect, there is a benevolent government of an individual who assumes his power through the, you might say, the inner wisdom of the people.
True.
And, that could be called an absolutely pure democracy if you wanted to.
Oh, yes, yes. We've got to call it that.
An absolutely pure kind of democracy.
Sure.
And would that mean, too, that there is a great degree of personal freedom?
There is, even to the selection of jobs and duties and things like that. That a man does what he is best fitted for and what he likes the best. There is no monetary system, they barter. The Bentleys, for example, getting back to these flying saucers, are, for the most part, by the way, constructed on Mars. They
are not a Venusian manufacturer.
Well, they haven't the ore for it. They bring ore in that the Martians have, and I often, in my own mind, think of Mars from their description as being the Pittsburgh of the universe, the Martians being very clever in that direction. The Venusians going
in. Are you implying that these flying saucers are constructed of iron?
I'm thinking of steel. Well, I'm thinking of other ores that would be the equivalent.
I see.
I have the names of the various ores and things that are not found. And by the way, I can tell you something that they do not have on Venus. And that is iron, as we find it. That they don't have. And that leads to buying the story sometimes that you read of the flying saucers coming in and taking samples of vegetation and ores and things like that from the face of our earth. That they do.
Bob, the Venusians apparently are quite familiar with what is happening on Earth right now.
Extremely.
In effect, our gentleman Venusian Heros is right over our heads as we shoot at this microphone, at these microphones at the moment. And they can see what is going on in Times Square if they bother to look down. But we can't quite see them because of this 10,000 or whatever mile was distance.
No, you've got the satellite out 10,000 miles, but the satellite is merely the garage. They keep the flying saucers.
Now,
again.
Let me see now. Satellite 2 is over New York City.
Somewhere in the area. In other words, it might be 200 or 300 miles one way or the other.
And Kiros is in charge of satellite...
Of communication.
Yeah. Who's in charge of satellite 2, which is over New York? Do you know that?
I do not know, no. Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious. Have the Venusians been studying our Earth in past centuries, for example?
Oh, yes.
Or is this rather recent?
For thousands of years, and we could take a quick trip back to a question you asked a few moments ago, Ellery. As to the discussion, I'm sorry, it was in the form of a telegram, the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. And it was quite humorous in this high school auditorium at Cocoa, Florida in February when... a gentleman very vehemently pounded the table and said, as the telegram said, there is no oxygen on Venus, there is no water, and so forth. And this pilot Hamble backed right into a corner a little bit, and he came back and he said, many times when I'm visiting the planet Mars, they were speaking of, by the way, this time on the water, he said, I am a man of great curiosity. I have seen the canals. I understand the canals, and I have examined the canals. You would have to make the trip to see for yourself. Johann, on the question of oxygen, said, our people have been studying Earth for many years. Our scientists gave us to understand that there was no atmosphere. So after many years of trying to operate our ventilators and come into close proximity with Earth, finally we did that, and what did we find? And the answer was really very good. He said, people.
When did this happen, Bob? I didn't quite get the dating of this event.
Well, I don't think either you or I could date it. They didn't date it at the time. It was 1,000 years ago, plus or minus.
That would be in Earth's turn. What century would that be on Earth? Can you do some quick calculation on that?
I can't tell you, really, Ellery, whether it was 2,000 years, 1,000, or how many?
Well, this was approximately in the year 958 A.D., let us say. We are getting into the medieval period, and they're leaving Byzantium behind. Have the Venetians transmitted any information about what they observed on Earth at that time?
No. So, Mr. Ali, if you and I would run over the Egyptian situation a little bit. Sir Mr. Ali was discussing the propulsion of the Ventlers, saying that they are propelled to some degree by musical notes and also by concentrations of light. He asked a rhetorical question then, stating that they use this as a force of energy, deriving it from the whole through the omniverse. And they put it this way to us. How else do you think that the great blocks of your pyramids were raised, except in such a manner?
Oh, you are saying that the pyramids were built with the same kind of force that is being used to drive the ventilators through space or through these multi-dimensions?
Yes.
You didn't know this?
I'm sorry, I did not.
Taking of energy from the universe.
I mean, this sounds like a fact. And I have read it, John.
Well, there's a story I think I've seen written about a man in Florida. I read it not too long ago that worked in isolation. He was building a home for a girl from Greece, I believe. And I think it's getting to be a tourist attraction now that there are tremendous blocks that he erected and put in place absolutely single-handed. And from whence they come, how they got there, and how he raised them alone into this beautiful, tremendous house or palace or whatever we might call it, nobody's
going in. Well, I know that many so-called primitive people have means of construction which defy the ingenuity of engineers. A similar phenomenon.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt a moment, gentlemen, and take care of a little piece of business there, Brady. And I think I can see you. That you've never had the opportunity of being in a Ventler. You've never been to Venus. You've never been to Mars. Now, of course, you could talk.
brought this question back to me, and I didn't know anything peculiar about the fact that I haven't been to these planets, because I have no contact with Venusians and Martians. We have had people on this program. We've had Howard Menger, we've had Buck Nelson, we've had George Van Tassel, we've had Dan Fry, and, well, I could go on for hours just giving you a list of names, of people who claim that they've either been in a flying saucer, you use the label Bentley, and also other people who claim that they've been to these other planets, and yet you seem to have so much knowledge about the planet Venus and the planet Mars, and yet you've never been invited to visit.
John, your question has two answers. First of all, the Venusians have told us repeatedly that our time is coming, and we are going. There's a gentleman in Philadelphia.
Our time is coming.
Miss Berry, myself, and others of our unit. Mm-hmm. And by the way, John, I'll invite you right now. You may go if you wish, because I have been told that I may invite those of the press and those whom I wish to go at the time. There's a gentleman in Philadelphia, Mr. S. Beryl Lush, who had printed in the newspapers an offer of a trip to the moon. On that stationery you've been describing, I simply wrote him very factually. I said, well...
Bob, what was this man's name? I didn't get it.
Beryl Lush. And I wrote him quite matter-of-factly. I thought I don't know when this might be arranged, but... and I can't guarantee the moon... And I'm wondering what kind of proof you would want. Photographs obviously could be fake. A piece of ore might be brought into the thing. And so we'll take up this matter. So I took the matter up with the Venusians, and they said, of course, such a trip will be arranged, and we may invite anyone at the time. And, of course, they're not taking us either to Venus or to the moon. However, a trip for Satellite 5 would be in order. So Mr. Lash's lawyer called, Mr. Rahill from Philadelphia called me in Florida, and we discussed it over the phone, and he has Mr. Lash's permission to settle for a trip to Satellite 5, and that will honor the offer. Now, there's one other part to that question. I said there were two. The Venusians, when they began flying in November, made very certain in telling us that they stayed deliberately away from us, because it is not their wish that any one person on Earth might receive the type of prestige or notoriety or infamy or however we wish to put it that would inflate their ego and their head, finally, and render them probably useless to the Venusians.
Well, how come Miss Brady and yourself were, in effect, chosen, Bob?
Well, wait a moment. I think the question would be, I've talked to Bob a couple of times before.
Yeah.
I don't know if Bob was chosen. Miss Brady was chosen, am I right? Or were you chosen too?
I was chosen.
I'm trying simply to understand.
Yes.
I didn't hear that, John.
A year ago, this approximate date was about my first encounter with the Venusians in a small... discussion, an interview between myself and the Venusians through Miss Brady. And they said at that time that my past history and who I was and so forth had been investigated, that I was a part of Satellite 5, that I was chosen for this work, and this was my work. And being one of the unpaid representatives of Venus, I have, since, as the year has gone by, realized that, as a woman in Washington once said to me, she said, you know, getting into this thing, she said, I've passed the point of no return. And that was my trouble. I got to a point where I couldn't turn around and go back again, because they'd laid my work out. And they make a cryptic comment that regardless of Miss Brady and, myself, or any other contacts that they have, they intend to go ahead with their mission, whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm. What do you... Well, wait a minute. I have a couple of more questions about Howard Menger and George Van Tassel and people like that. But first, let me bring our listeners up to date with the news.
In reading these telegrams, Bob, I know that the listeners that have sent in questions, they would naturally want you to answer because we don't consider Mr. Lamere to be a Venetian authority.
He's in charge of facts.
That's right. What makes the Venusian happy or unhappy? And the second question is, do they have sports? This is from Sidney Wood. Bob?
Well, the question about being happy or unhappy was put to the Venusians by a television announcer, Larry Garrity,
of station WCSH, Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine, correction. And he said, if I were to tell you, he was speaking with Johann through Miss Brady in front of the television cameras,
that I did not believe you now, would that make you unhappy? Would it make you angry? Johann said, no, that would not make us angry. That we do not...
We get angry, as you people do, yes.
But that would not do it. We are sometimes unhappy when our work does not go correctly and so forth.
So, Mr. Garrity turned around and asked him, do they have humor? Are there things that make you happy and things like that? And Johann came right back and he said, yes.
I find it quite humorous to us, we hear, that you do not believe this method that I am using to contact you.
And there's one little more to that, if this gentleman would like just a little answer. Mr. Garrity tried to trap Johann, and he said, do you have art? Do you have poetry? Do you have novels? Johann came back with the affirmative. Yes, we have all those things. And Mr. Garrity said, all right, I want you to give me a poem.
Johann came back very quickly.
I like the tape. I like the authenticity to the way it came back. Johann said, I am a pilot. I'm not a poet, but I will say to you that when you see through our shining through your skies, our shining ship coming to you, we wish you well upon the earth beneath, or something like that. It was a little stanza that rhymed very nicely and was very well done. So they do have the humor.
Pardon me. Here's a couple of more telegrams. This lady has requested me not to use her name. I would like to say greetings and God bless you from a very busy New Yorker to members of Venus Satellite Number 2 to WOR. That's the message, and I imagine that the lady would certainly like to extend her greetings also to Satellite Number 5. She didn't mention it in the telegram, but evidently...
May I thank her?
Oh, certainly, certainly.
I'd like to thank her very much, and also to go on record, as I sit here this evening, and Miss Brady sits in Florida, that of the hundreds of letters that we have in our possession, all filed away alphabetically, and we're keeping good track of everything, neither of us have any type of derogatory letter.
Hold up to that. Wait a while.
There's another... here, you got... You can't hold this one, man.
This is from New York. A gentleman by the name of William Klutz. K-L-U-S. Dear Long John, all of these fellas that claim to be going to Mars, Venus, and other planets have never brought back one concrete evidence. I think he means one piece of concrete evidence. Of being there. These fellas must be communist sympathizers, or else they wouldn't allow the Russians to get so far ahead of us in the space race.
I believe Sputnik number 1 went up, I think it was on October 4th. I stopped for gasoline in a small gas station.
My friend, the attendant said to me, my wife has a question, and I would like you to ask the Venusians this.
He wrote it down on a piece of paper. I thrust it in my pocket. It so happened that I was quite anxious to speak with them, of course. So we had an immediate contact.
And I asked them point blank for the filling station attendant's answer. I said, why then did you permit Sputnik 1 to be a success? Chemicali came back immediately without a pause or hesitation. She said, Robert, it does not contain warlike material. It serves no purpose militarily. And it is merely a scientific object, so we permitted it to fly. As to people bringing back things from Venus, we have
no information that would certify that anyone who had gone to Venus and returned,
except in astral flight, which to a Venusian, of course, is a very real method of transportation and a very real thing. However, the Venusians assure us that they have a very great many of our people from Earth.
The Venusians have stated that they have a large number of our people on Venus, adequately taken care of in special homes.
Have they kidnapped these people?
Proper atmosphere, yes. Miss Berry has a story, or Miss Brady has a story that happened.
Bob, you said that the communications office of Kiros is anchored over New York City in Satellite 2. Might he be in mind to kidnap the party line? Is that a possibility?
Well, it's a possibility, yes. Probability, who knows?
I was holding on to the table.
Well, I have a hard job getting in 1440 Broadway.
Do you mean to say, Bob, that the Venusians are kidnapping Earth people?
Kidnapping is a local term, I think. Let us say...
You can use any term that you want.
We've got 99 years for that.
Yes, they point out that... Now, getting back to the story, it happened in Ocala, Florida.
The parties concerned were a deputy sheriff and members of the civilian defense.
And the occurrence happened prior to my association with Miss Brady. However, Miss Brady formed the Daytona Beach Flying Saucer Club. They invited Major Kehoe and had him lecture there, and they had other persons lecture. This sighting at Ocala... The deputy sheriff, as I recall, was unable to come in person, but a couple of his staff and others of the civil defense drove approximately 120 miles, came over, and lectured to the audience, stating that the deputy sheriff would go on record that he was coming down the highway, that right behind his patrol car, there was a flying saucer, flying very, very low, almost creeping up on him, and suddenly zoomed up when, on both sides of the highway, there appeared the inevitable telephone wires that keep private pilots like myself from making quick landings on highways without watching what we're doing. He feels that the abduction, perhaps, of himself and his car was prevented by that. There are other stories. For example, if you go through the annals of aviation history, I believe there's a story that Miss Brady and I have gone over. It happened at Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where on a routine navigational flight, a Naval SMJ at about that time went out toward the Bahamas, and he didn't return. Another ship went out to see why he didn't come back, and that ship didn't return. A third ship went out and hasn't returned, and finally there were either five or six ships that didn't return. For no reason at all. Weather clear, everything fine. Bahamas, I've flown there, are about 60 miles offshore.
You've got a couple of more telegrams there. This is from R.D. Schofield. Can Bob Ewing verify story of Venusian dog or other stories of people who have appeared on the program concerning planet Venus? Also, can he tell us more about the sciences and arts on the planet? And has he any information on the nature of domestic animals as pets on Venus? R.D. Schofield.
We are told that
Van Fry was very definitely taken...
May I interrupt you just like that? Our listeners will know. We'll take these one at a time, then. Van Fry is the man that claims that he was in a flying saucer and that he was connected with the Aerojet Corporation at the time. He flew from the White Sands Proving Grounds in New Mexico to New York and back in about 32 minutes. Now, do you want to tell us what they told you about Van Fry?
Yes, they verify the book that Mr. Fry wrote, The White Sands Incident, saying that they picked him up at White Sands, flew him back, flew him to New York and returned in 38 minutes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about Van Tassel, who owns Giant Rock Airport in near Yucca Valley, California?
They verify that they have used Mr. Van Tassel, yes.
It's sort of half-tense, isn't it?
Yes, John.
In other words, you're saying then that Van Tassel is not being contacted by Finucci?
We, at this time.
Yes, at that particular time, yes.
What about George Adamski?
They relate the incident, as Mr. Adamski does, that the pilot met and spoke with him. They gave us the name of the pilot. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue. He understood perfectly what Mr. Adamski was thinking and wanted to convey. He did not speak English. And he knows that Mr. Adamski understood a very small fraction of what he wanted to convey to Mr. Adamski. The rest of Mr. Adamski's travels and work and so forth was after flight.
What about Buck Nelson, the man with the 385-pound Venusian dog?
After flight.
The dog, too?
John...
I haven't tried too much. I have learned indirectly on tapes and questions asked them, the factors I gave them. I haven't really tried and tried to investigate the authenticity of everyone else. I can tell you this, that Rick Williamson visited us in Florida, made a very nice lecture.
I personally sat in on a private conference that he had with the Venusians. John McCoy was there at the time. And
wait a minute, you sat in on what?
A private interview that he had with the Venusians.
That Williamson, the anthropologist, had with the Venusians?
Yes.
You mean through a minute,
right? Yes.
Oh, I see.
We have many people who come to Florida
who are in the field and who are not in the field, but merely have an active interest. When they come to Florida, as Ellery mentioned here a while ago, with this question, are you chosen? They seem to come with some kind of a purpose because there is a way of establishing that very quickly. Given a trance situation with Miss Brady, they talk with various Venusians or people from other planes of existence, let us say. And it was a very, very interesting occasion that Rick Williamson, John McCoy, and Mrs. Laura Burgess of Grand Rapids were sitting there. And the Venusians consider that they are a part of our unit. They will work with us.
I didn't know. I just received the telegram.
I am quite amazed. Gary Yellsman, the well-known photographer, evidently is not at Giant Rock Airport. He was there last year, and... I heard that he's going to represent the Globe Photo.
He's working for Globe Photo this year out at Guy Rock. However, we have a message here from him, and we may take care of that after a little while.
Here's another one from Ralph Einstein.
Mr. Ewing, please explain how chickens, eggs, cows, or the cow's milk, etc., can exist on a planet when the surface temperature is over that of boiling water. Please don't change the subject or double talk.
Well, it's a matter of opinion that neither of us can settle, but
I did not add in that last phrase. This is part of a telegram. For a moment, it slipped me.
I
want to read it?
Yes.
No one on Earth knows whether or not for sure the temperature is over that of boiling water on Venus. It's incapable of proof. And I would say this, that I won't give an inch to the scientists here. I certainly think they don't know any more about it than we do with our alleged Venusian contact.
Well, John, when you're out in public like this with your hair down, I know what Miss Brady and I always, in public utterances, by the way, have said this. But we have never asked anyone to believe. We're doing what we're told to do. We're receiving what information we get. My tape recorders don't lie. And what are you going to do with the information, for example? My Venusians say that they live these kind of lives. They have a temperate climate. They describe the contrasting climates between the valleys and the mountain peaks as reaching out of the...
Well, this is the Decoration Day weekend, and I...